At what point do you get involved in the actual drug operation?
Well, I never did drug trafficking.
You never involved in any of that?
Never. Because you're not going to believe this. Well, because no, because do you know? Authorities don't believe this. But the last shipment that my father sent was in 96. He sent 100 kilos to Houston and some toxic chemicals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they say that he was sending 150. A guy who sent 1,500 tons of cocaine was sending 150 kilos. So that's something doesn't add up.
Mm-hmm.
You see? But, you know, and it's understandable. I'm not judging nobody. The authorities want to hear what somebody wants to say. And if that's what they want to say, so they go for it. So.
But I know during your session with Murph at the conference, you also mentioned that you were handling a lot of the corruption and a lot of the bribery. At what point did that start?
My father is captured on August 5 or 6 of
95.
95? Yeah. 6 of August of 95. So I'm a lawyer, so I can go to prison wherever I want, you know, to see that. So he calls me and say, hey, he was captured on Sunday, and he called me like Monday and told me, hey, son, I need to talk to you. So
now, when you go in as a lawyer, though, I don't know the way it is in Colombia, so tell us, do they, because there is an absolute prohibition. If you're a lawyer meeting with a client, they can't record it, they can't videotape it. You have to have absolute privacy between you and your client.
I sit with my uncle and my dad in a meeting, and then my father talked that day. That I was like, you know, why my uncle is not talking? My daughter told me, hey, son, I know I always have you a part of this, but I'm going to need you to help me in something. And I say, what do you need, my dad? Told me, I need you to help me in my defense. And they're going to be, because we knew what's coming, you know, what I told you in the interview we did over there, that we knew you guys wanted to, the American government wanted to put 3 or 4 great projects against drug trafficking. We already knew what our informants that we had in Congress and all that. And the government, that's what's going to happen. So he told me, I'm going to need you for this. And I say, okay, Dad, you need me? No, he said something that's only in cyclism. How do you say it? Cycling?
Mm-hmm.
You have to put the yellow shirt on.
Oh, yeah, you have to put the yellow shirt on.
Got it.
Yeah. So what happened?
Then I start, no? Everything is a beginning. And so I started, you know, this trying to help the guy, and I became a very important part of the puzzle for them, because I was, you know, meeting with important senators, and I became the lobbyist of the Cartel Cali.
How did your conversations go with them? Because they obviously know who you are, they know who your father is, they know what he's involved in, they know about the Cali Cartel. When you approach them, are they thinking that you're coming? It's like the way Pablo used to say, you know, plato y plomo, right? Silver, you know, or lead. Were they concerned about that, or were they more looking for like, oh, we know that you're going to bribe us, so they set the conditions to
get they wanted money. Because they knew we were not going to kill them, because that was not the way we operated. So they wanted money. They wanted silver.
And talk about that a little bit, your philosophy, because Pablo was killing everybody. I mean, he was blowing up everything. He was killing police officers. What was the philosophy of the Cali Cartel around that?
I believe we made a mistake. We believed that our problem was legally, and our problem was political. So we were bribing people, trying to get those projects, you know, try to stop those projects, and believe we didn't understand what's happening. Somebody one day told me, and I said, this guy's crazy, a politician that I knew there. In those days, they helped me a lot. I'm not going to say the name because he's my... I believe he's my friend. I don't know if I'm his friend. He believes I'm his friend. The guy, I sit down because I used to live in Bogota in an apartment. I was in the third floor, and he lived in the fifth floor. So we used to go and have some drinks talking. So he told me, you're confused. Your problem is not legally. You're not going to win anything. And I said, this guy is crazy, what he's talking about. But he had the truth. We had to think politic way. because our problem was not legally. Because
it was political.
Yeah, it's political. Total political.
And that was Pablo's fight, too. It was political. It was around, you know, the extradition.
Yeah, but because Pablo pressured a lot in those, but really, and the authorities know that. Kaserowski, the guy who brought us down, he knew that my father was the guy who was doing the legal things. Right. And when that happened, as tradition, my father, that senator called me, "Hey, Miguel, do you think this is the way it should be?" My father was investing a lot of money in that moment. It was 91 when we built a new constitution in Colombia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's when they... So as long as extradition was outlawed, everything was okay. But the minute you could extradite people to the United States... That was one of the fundamental changes.
Yeah, the first week I got to Colombia is when they enacted the new constitution, which outlawed extradition, and then 3 days later, Pablo surrendered that first week.
Yeah, and you know what this guy did? This guy's a maniac. That day, we won. Extradition was not prohibited for Colombia. He put a bomb in Congress.
Pablo did?
He did. He put a bomb.
I don't remember that.
Look at that. He put a bomb. So people will remind
if they wanted to change their mind, they're going to be reminded.
Yeah. He did it. He put a bomb nearby.
But wow. You know what Murph says? Murph comes into country. He comes into Bogota 3 days later. Pablo surrenders. He takes personal credit that his appearance in the country made Pablo surrender.
Hey. Yeah, see, I
believe that.
If I came after you, you'd have been in jail longer. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
See, but let me take a quick divergence. This is kind of funny in an ironic way, because here we are sitting. I mean, let's be honest for a second, William. Your organization, while it didn't go after the government, because you said you didn't want to go after the state, but people were killed. People died, right? Even though you might have been involved in the corruption, you knew people who were in charge of killing other people. And people are going to go, how can we... guys who were on one side of the law talk to somebody who was on the other side of the law? And I think it's one of the things that you have to get to as a point when you're an adult to say, look, and we're going to get into your sentence and doing your time. We talked to George Young. We got George Young's last interview before he passed away, before he died. Mm-hmm. And
George Young
was, do you remember the movie Blow with Johnny
Depp? Yeah, Blow.
That's George Young.
Okay.
He was Pablo's business partner. He was the one, he was responsible at one time for bringing, what was it, Steve, 80% of all cocaine?
Yeah, I forget. It was outrageous.
George was importing 80% of all the cocaine into the United States. He was... Even before you guys were doing a lot of stuff in New York, he had Miami and he had L.A.
Yeah, but remember, we were first in Pablo.
Yeah.
We started the business first in Pablo.
Right.
Pablo started in 76. We started in
73. 73, right. But
we should have put them top priority instead of Pablo.
No, because we were better boys.
Yeah,
good least, boys.
Yeah, Pablo is holy cow.
No.
His bombing campaign was outrageous.
No, it's not about being good or bad. You're right what you're saying. You know, because sometimes
we have to be able to have an adult discussion about history without getting into. It's not an us versus them at this point. You've done your time. You're a free man, you know. You owe no obligation to the United States anymore.
Right.
You're done, right? So, but I think it's important for people listening to this to understand the context, what was going on at the time, and what I'm very interested in is how you thought about things, right? You went from being, I mean, think about this. You went to law school. You had a master's degree. You had an MBA. You were very educated. You had a very successful law practice. But then what happens is people say, how do you gain weight? It's not like you eat a hamburger and the next day you weigh 50 pounds more. It's increments. It's a little slice. It's a little bit here. It's hard to see the change day to day. But over time, in six months, you went from being a lawyer with successful practice to now being pretty much up to your eyes in the Cali cartel.
A boss in the street.
What's that?
A boss in the street.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A boss on the street.
Yeah, because what I told you before, we were convinced that we're doing the right thing, right? From
the right thing in terms of what?
Family business.
Okay.
But the family business, you know, to protect our family, where we're doing the right stuff, and I was wrong believing that, because that was an illusion that they sell me. And then I found out that it wasn't that way, because in the end, when we finished this story, and I'm running. I found out that they sold me something that was not true.
And found that his father and uncle.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's a betrayal.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because you talked about August 6, 95. That's when your father's captured, right?
Yes.
So what happens after that? How do you step up into the organization?
Well, I become the man. I start bribing a lot of people. I have something that maybe nobody believes, you know, and it's crazy. But I lost my mind. You know, I know how can a man do this. I went to Congress with a bag filled of, let's say, like $500,000. And I sit in an office in a Senate, and I'm, okay, Mr. Steve, come on. Okay, what are we going to do? Okay. I'm going to give you $20,000. Inside of Congress, doing this.
In Bogota.
That's crazy. I lost all proportion of everything.
Reality.
That, you know, it's crazy. Because I didn't fear anything, because I believe I was untouchable, because that they sell this to us, you know, that I can do anything. And I was, you know, nobody was going to touch me.
But did not the takedown of Pablo Escobar teach you a lesson that nobody is untouchable?
Well, my father believed he killed Escobar so he can do anything he wanted.
And remember, your uncle beat the rap over in Spain, right?
No, my uncle and my father beat them because in the end...
They bribed their way out of that.
Yeah, in the end, everybody saw this guy was the chief, Gilberto. But in the end, this guy was the man, mm-hmm. my father, from 84.
And what William Stoney's pointing at his book, which we talked about too, Son of the Cali Cartel... And it says, The Truth Untold by Netflix. No,
please don't tell that to Steve. Yeah, he'll get mad, and I don't want to...
He already knew that. Hey, I was going to ask you, though, on the book it says, William Rodriguez Abadia?
Abadia.
What is Abadia?
Abadia in Spain is a church.
Okay.
That's my last name, my mother's last name.
And see, that's the thing I want people to understand, that in your culture, it's Spanish culture, Mexican culture, it's the... paternal name followed by the maternal name, right?
Yeah.
Why is there not a hyphen in there?
A what?
A hyphen. You know, like Rodriguez hyphen, you know, the dash. Abadia.
No, because that's the way I'm known. William. That's my name. William, okay. Rodriguez Abadia.
So, Abadia.
Oh, yeah. That's my father's name and mother's name. My mother's name.
What's your middle name?
I don't have.
No middle
name? Thank God. William, what's going to be a middle name for William?
but that's interesting, though, is that you are Colombian, but your name is William.
My mother.
Not Guillermo.
Yeah.
No, my mother was she liked the English dynasty.
Yeah.
So she put me William. My father wanted to put me Carlos Alberto, because Carlos is my grandfather's name.
Okay.
But my mother said, no, you have never in the life. His name is going to be William.
that's unusual. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, my mother was
in charge.
Yeah.
Not in charge. She was a big catcher. You say catcher? Catcher? You say that. Sometimes I lose my English, my Spanish English.
Spanglish.
Spanglish.
And she had a lot of, you know,
she had a lot of authority. She was like the matriarch of the family, or the...
No, she wasn't, but she was very strong. She was very strong. And when she said something, she didn't care.
Right.
With my father, my uncle, she didn't care.
So, interesting. Let's talk about that. At this point now, when this is all going on, what's your relationship with your mother?
You know...
She knows what's going on, right? She knows.
Oh, she knows, but...
Yeah.
No, she doesn't know because we come... Remember, we come over here, and then we go back, and then... She finds out some stuff, but in the end, I wanted to, unfortunately, because it was a great mistake that I did with my mother. You know, I judged her, because she done brought me here and she took my father away. So I wanted to teach her a lesson. So I went to live with somebody else.
Hmm.
So it's sad, but in the end, you know, she hurt me a lot because my father was very important to me.
So, but at this point, were you talking with your mother?
Yeah, I talked to her, but I decided to go and live with my aunt.
No, I met at this point in 95.
Yeah, no, I was taking care of my mother in those days. You know, I was giving her what she needed.
So let's talk about now. You're walking the halls of Congress. You're handing out cash. You believe you're not going to get touched, not arrested. What happens?
Well, you start to lose reality, right? I judged my father, but and then I was transforming in him. Mm-hmm. So it's something like, you know, it's crazy. And now I'm sitting in the same table of these two guys, no? Because, you know, it's because in the end, yeah, we sit in the same table, but they were in charge. So, but now I'm there. You know, my point of view, they accepted because they needed me. They need him in the street. You know, I'm the guy who's out there talking with everybody, and I know what's going on. So the guys respect me.
How did that feed your ego? Because you went from being a lawyer over here handling all this stuff to now you are, in fact, the de facto.
Yeah, I'm the man, and my ego was
out the window,
because, you know, I could say to Gilberto, no, that's not the way. I could say to Miguel Rodriguez, no, it's this way. So it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and so in a year, now I have the power.
But you also have the power, too. You said you never did it, so we take it your word, but it's like, but the power of life and death is one of the most intoxicating things. You know, it's like, with Pablo, he could just, I mean, Steve, you were telling this too. Somebody thought if he thought somebody's stealing from him, that's all he needed. Mm-hmm. His belief, he'd have him killed.
Yep. It didn't even take that much.
Yeah.
He just, if he had a suspicion, especially if he thought you were a snitch.
Well, and it wasn't just a murder. That's what I told you the story. I had Salcedo's life in my hand.
Yeah.
And I didn't permit to him to be
killed.
Why not? I don't know.
You had the power.
Yeah, I could have done it. Maybe it'd be the worst decision in my life, maybe the best one. I don't know. Maybe I never got indicted if I killed him. But I don't know. I didn't feel like, you know, because it was not my part in this organization. My part was corruption, my part was what I knew, you know, there was the law and that was my role. And okay. And I accepted because my father didn't have me for being a hitman. You know, he had me for this other, and I believe that that's more power when you can sit with a senator and that guy does whatever you want him to do. I believe that's a lot of power in there.
Yeah, in a way, that's more powerful than saying, okay, somebody's killed, but whoever's killed, it's like Pablo would have some low-level gardener, you know, or somebody killed, right? But the ability to own, in a sense, a senator, a judge.
Right.
You know,
and once you've got them first time, you've got them forever.
You got them. Yeah, I got them forever. You know.
So what was? How did you? Let's talk about. Here's what's interesting. I'd like to find out. How did you make the approach? I mean, in other words,
I had people for that first. You know, the first approach. I had some people that I paid, so they made the first approach, and then they take the guy out, and then I finish the approach.
What was the approach, though?
No, the guy, because every was about money. You know, so I knew. Because, like I said before in the other interview and the conference we were, everybody has, in the end, has or a price or they have a weakness. So you have to figure out what this guy has. Mm-hmm. So that's my father taught me that. So, you know, if this guy doesn't have money, I'm going to look for something that he wants.
A weakness.
Where it could be a vice.
Yeah, vice. Because maybe he likes boys, he likes girls, he likes cocaine.
Underage, whatever it is. Yeah.
So right. You have to know what the guy wants, and then you get him.
How much money, as you look back on it now, in terms of all the bribes you think you paid, the corruption, how much money do you think you spent?
I don't know. A lot of money. It's crazy the way we spend money in those
More
days.
Than 10 million?
30, 40 million, something like that.
30, 40 million?
Trying to bribe. Because you guys were very difficult to win, you guys.
Well, let's talk about
the American government is very difficult, man. So we have to, you know, fight for our lives. But, you know, in the end, we needed more money. And we didn't have it. Nobody believes that, but we didn't have it.
Because they were impacting your drug trade, right? The profits.
Yeah, that's because, you know, they were hunting down for a year and a half. They were they went for them, boom, 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 hit them, and they could only put their head out there because they'll take them.
Well, part of the sentence for your dad and your uncle was they had to forfeit $2.1 billion in assets, right?
Yeah, that's not true.
That's in your book.
Yeah, but that helped me for my sentence. But that's what the judge says. But our fortune was not that much. Our fortune was like $700,000, something like that.
That'd be
too much.
It's got to be more than that. You guys, look, you're dealing in, you were just saying it too, thousands and thousands of kilos. You're talking.
Yeah, but we're losing too. It's you guys, the authorities, don't figure out that we lose money too, you know. And you know how much the war against Escobar cost it? How much Gilberto began to Colombia cost it? Millions of dollars, you know. And politicians, lawyers. So we're spending a lot of money, and in the end, money finishes if you don't continue, you know, in the drug trafficking.
But
and you don't believe that, and authorities don't believe that. But we weren't involved in '97 in drug trafficking, because my father was brought here for 150 kilos. My father was sending 20, 30, you know. And tons of cocaine.
Right. But assets don't just include cash. It includes properties, artwork, anything of value. So, I mean, we're
surviving on a company that we're taking out like $1 million a month.
Wow.
So, at the height, though, before everything started turning and going, as we say, south, you know, things started happening. How much do you think your father was worth?
In 88, my father was bought $100 million in a Caleta. He had $75 million in the banks, and he had companies worth like $300-400 million. That was my father worth in 88.
That was the height of his wealth?
I believe. I don't know. That's what I heard, you know, mm-hmm. because he never talked to me about that. But
that wasn't enough.
No. But let's talk about you. What was the height of your wealth? How much?
Oh, no.
No, come on. You know, between everything, what was the most you were worth at one point?
$3 million in cash?
Everything. No.
No, in cash and
houses, cars,
properties. And properties, let's say like $30 million, something like that.
All right. Why wasn't that enough?
For me, it was enough, but you didn't leave me alone. That's the problem.
You didn't stop corrupting and doing
crime. Yeah, but that was a fight, you know, to survival, because, you know, there was a war against surviving our generation, our family. So for me, it would be enough, but it was a lot of stuff in stake. Not only money. Money goes and comes.
Right.
You know, so, but, you know, being able to raise our kids and be able to be, you know, tranquilos, you know, safe.
Yeah,
it's not easy.
Todo suave.
But it was a war against you guys, and we're going to lose it because our two generals didn't understand what happened. Because our two generals was Gilberto and Miguel. I was only the help. I was a soldier. You see, and I sat down, but in the end, the decision was taken by them. Good or bad, they were the guys who were taking the decisions.
So let's talk then about your rise and then where things start to fall. So how does that take us through that now? You kind of, now, like you say, you're the de facto head. You're the head of the Cali cartel.
No, I'm not the head. I'm the boss in the street, because in the end, the two heads were there too. And most my dad in the end, you know, I was sitting to them and saying, we have to do this. And maybe they say almost in 80%, they say yes, what I was saying. But in the decisions that matter, they took the decision, and they're taking the wrong decisions in that moment, in my point of view, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were, you know, they were blind to see what's going on in the environment because they were in jail. It's not the same being in jail and being in the street.
Right. And it seems like their thought process has never changed. Even after they got extradited to the United States, they really thought that they were going to get reduced sentences that they could carry out in Colombia.
Yeah, they believe they can get 15 years. My uncle was one of the most important drug traffickers in history. Pablo Escobar and this guy were the most famous drug trafficker known. And he believed he can get 15 years over here. He can, 30 years. He got 30 years because the Constitution of Colombia protect him mm-hmm. to get 30 years.
Yeah.
He should get 3 life sentences and 20 years. That's what they were asking for us.
For our listeners, that's an agreement with the United States has with other governments, because in most countries, the maximum sentence you can get is 30 years.
So, and that includes murder.
Right. So to extradite somebody to the United States, we can impose our sentencing guidelines. There has to be an agreement that the max will be 30 years.
Wow.
It's not every country, but most countries are like that.
So let's talk about that. Your ascension. When do you reach the pinnacle, the apex, and then things start to?
I believe when I was shot. That day, life changed for me because.
So let's talk about that day. What was that day?
It was the 24th of May of 1996.
And where were you at and what were you doing?
No, it's crazy, because that day I was going to go. I was a very, a saint in our zone. It's called the sort of El Señor de los Milagros, the miracle sort. There's a saint.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's in a place nearby in Cali. And I was going on there because I believe in that saint. And I was going that day to see that saint. And my aunt called me. We had a transaction with a player of the soccer team.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to sell him to Portugal, to a team. So, hey, she called me, I was going there, and she called me, 8:30 of the morning. Hey, son, I need you here because we're going to do this deal. So I go, and so I changed plans. Destiny.
Right.
And I go to the soccer team office, and then my cousin comes with 2 guys that used to work with us in the organization, and we were there, and I say, hey, let's go to lunch. So we decide to go on a restaurant that I like to go on, a Brazilian restaurant, and then we go, and then life changed for me forever because I was shot and I survived. But
let's talk about the shooting. So give us some, you talked a little bit in detail about what happened there, but set us up. Where were you at? What were you doing? What did you see?
No, what I tell you, I finished the disagreement with a Portugal team, and I sold this guy for $1,200,000, something like that. And then I finished, and then I say to this guy, let's go to lunch. So my cousin say, I cannot go because I have a meeting. So my cousin goes, doesn't go to, and I go with these guys to that restaurant. And we're there, we're eating, and it was 2 o'clock. Of the afternoon. I don't know, something got in me, and I had to call my wife. And I call her and say, hey, love, how is the kid? Because I only have 1 daughter. And we talk about 5 minutes, and when I,
hang up.
And the conversation with my wife, there were 4 guys came in and sit in a table, and they got up and say, hands up, everybody, and then they saw us, and they start working against us, and then I believe I was gonna get kidnapped. I don't know why. I believe I was gonna get kidnapped, and so the guy started shooting. And what saved me? I rise, right? Mm-hmm. And I got the first 2 bullets in my arms.
What they call defensive wounds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hands up. Pom. And then I got in my stomach and in my legs, and then the other shot. So
you were shot 8 times.
8 times. So. The impact threw me back. And
who knew you were going to be there?
Nobody, because I took a decision where I go. But they were following us from the place for the club, American club. They were following.
Who was behind this?
The North Valley Cartel.
Why?
Because they wanna hit. Because what happened when Santa Cruz decided to make a prison break, from prison. He went to hiding and he wanted to fight with this guy. He had a problem with that. So they killed him. But what I tell you, this guy Castaño, the white wing head of this organization, he used to be an ally with the Pepes, right? So we believe in him. So Santa Cruz arranged a meeting, and this guy betrayed him in the North Valley, and he gave them to the North Valley cartel, and they killed him. And that they gave him to the police, and they made a scenario where he was gunned down for authorities because Danilo was behind this. Mm-hmm. Danilo Gonzalez was behind this. And so, they were... That way bandit thing, if we touch somebody close to, maybe these guys are gonna go against us. But in the end, Jose didn't do the right thing because he didn't tell my uncle and dad he was gonna escape from prison, and that brought a lot of heat to them. So now that we're glad about that, because we love that guy, he was very close to us. But in the end we feel like a little betrayed by him.
Yeah.
But he didn't. But he got killed, and then that brought a lot of heat from those people, because how the bandits act? They're afraid of your... If I hit you, they're afraid that maybe I'm going to go back against you. So they started looking for excuses and excuses and excuses. So they found an excuse, and they went for people that we had that ran the street, that had gun power in the street. And I was the political power. So they wanted to take him out. And unfortunately for us, I survived that attempt on my life because, I could convince my father and uncle that it was a war we were not going to win, because I knew this guy Danilo was behind them. And that guy ran the police.
Talk to us about who got shot, who got killed that day.
Three bodyguards outside. My three bodyguards were killed outside. And my friend from when I was 15 years old was killed. And a guy who was an important guy for us in the street got killed that day. And somebody who worked me, was like my second guy behind me.
Mm-hmm. Second got shot. Command?
Yeah. Not command. He was, my help, my second.
Okay.
So he got shot and killed too.
So, how long did it take you to recover?
3 months. One in the hospital and two in my house. Because the most important was a wound in my leg. I was shot in my leg. And so that was the most important wound that I had. And then my father called me one day. Hey, son, I need you to come. They've been doing peace treaty inside the prison. These guys were sending people.
Mm-hmm.
So they got an arrangement, and we made peace with these guys. So my father comes and calls.
And when you say you made peace with these guys, who's
the North Valley cartel leaders. Okay. So he calls me in. And then he says, hey, son, I need you to do something. Yeah, what do you need? I was recovering from being almost killed. We made an arrangement with these people, the North Valley cartels, and they think you're the best guy for what I told you about the properties, that project season.
The 8,000?
No, no.
800?
No, no, no. Remember that I told you there were four projects for United States extradition, money laundering, and the properties.
Yeah, asset seizure.
Forfeiture.
Yeah. Seizure, yeah. Forfeiture, yeah.
They say you're the guy for that. And I say, what are you talking about? You want me to...
Wait a minute. These guys just tried to kill you. Now they want you to do something for them.
For them, yeah. It's crazy. Then my father called me and say, you have to do this. And you want me to...
Wait a minute, Dad. They just shot me 8 times.
Yeah, I told my father, are you crazy? This guy attempted my life. No, but you cannot... Never, you cannot, it was a very, important thing he told me. He told me, you can never show those guys that you are, how you say the word, that you are...
Scared or afraid?
No, that you have something against them.
That you want to retaliate against them.
You never can show that because they'll kill you.
Yeah, okay.
And that was a very good thing that he told me that day and say, I'm not going to do it. He said, no, you. And then my uncle jumped out and said, no, you have to do it for the family. He said, you want me to get in this guy to only attend to my life? Yeah, you have to do this because the family is our wealth and that. And they convinced me that day. And then I go and I go to war with those guys, you know.
But you go to war with them?
No, but war means against that this project. No, talking
against the government.
Yeah, I have to paint and go with these guys and you know receive money from these guys and it was crazy, you know. And I won.
So they're donating. So they're giving money to you to use for corruption and bribery.
Corruption. So what happened there? We lost in Senate and I won in the. How do you say it?
The House.
The Congress, the House?
Yep.
I want the House. And when it happened, you have to be an agreement between the House and the Senate. And they make like a commission of 15 guys. And I had like 9. But this guy betrayed us and they didn't send the money. We needed $10 million. And we lost it. And we lost that day, we lost the war because we lost our
without the money, you had no power.
No power.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So what happened after that? So
I got tired of that, and I told my father, I'm not going to do this anymore. I want to. And then I retired to running the team, the soccer team.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime they needed something important, they called me. You know, hey, we need this. And okay. So they convinced me again. And, you know, but I knew because then they came the solution project and then they believe they want something, but I know what America wanted. No, okay, we're not gonna bring you from the past, but we're gonna bring you if you do something. I know sooner or later I was gonna get indicted.
I knew that
because I know what's going on. They didn't know what's going on.
So from that point, where are we at in terms of 96 97? All right,
97 98.
All right. Now you say you think you're going to, so what happens? Events it because you do.
No, God gave me like 5 years more, and then they indicted me in New York for a case when they put me to do a conspiracy with the brother of the chief of the Norvalley cartel, Orlando Henao.
A conspiracy?
Yeah. So yeah. I got indicted for that, and that's crazy because.
So well, but did you do it?
No. I can show you the release of that case from New York.
They dropped the case.
They did?
Yep.
Okay.
They dropped the case against me because they didn't have any proof against me. It was not my voice. There was a guy from Medellin talking, and I'm from Cali. I talk very different from mm-hmm. the guy. So, but they didn't care.
So during that right. 5 years, what was going on?
I was running the soccer team. I was doing, again, my legal work. You know, I opened my office again. I was making a lot of money doing cases, and I was doing what I like. I love soccer, so you know I was running the team.
But what were you doing for your father?
Not too much. But what I tell you, when they needed something important, they
like
called
a politician.
They called a kamikaze. Hey, we need you for this.
That's you, huh? Hmm? The kamikaze.
Yeah, it was me.
What would define what important means when they said they needed something important? What would
let's
that
say
be?
They needed something done important of corruption. So let's say they needed something for the company to fight against, you know, some laws that are there. So I came in and I did the operation to try to corrupt the judges and all that because I had the people. Me, my cousin didn't know that. So some a guy wanted to go to the play, but he didn't have the
experience.
The experience. He didn't know how to act, and he was stupid because he believed everything was very expensive. And when you're talking about important stuff, you don't think about money. You think about doing what it needs to be done to the public.
Yeah, I mean it's. You kind of have gone up, now you've come down. I mean, in terms of you've tried to get out of the business, right? But what finally happens, though, because you are finally indicted?
Because I knew attorneys needed somebody outside, the Cuckoo Command, who had that power, and I had a lot of, you know, I had a lot of spotlight, you say, and with these organizations like North Valley Cartel, politicians talk too much, so they talk, you know, what you're doing. So, and you guys are, you're hearing the same from, so you knowing who is the guy who can run stuff,
right?
And so I had, you know, a lot of spotlight, like I said before. So I was the man, indicated man that authorities needed to attain what they always wanted. Gilberto and Miguel over here. I was not doing drug trafficking. I can pass any right. How you call that?
Polygraph.
And I can tell you I was not doing that because it was not. I didn't need. I had the money to live the way I wanted because I was making a lot of money.
Right.
In my companies and legally, and, you know, being a lawyer.
But what were you finally indicted for?
For that corporation I told you in New York that I can show you the
but chocolate. That was dropped, but at some point.
But what happens? And it becomes a war between New York and Miami. Yeah. Who's going to get the medal for that Rodriguez?
Right.
So Kaskerowski has spent 15 years, you know, against us, and he gets some witness, and he indicts us. And that part of that is true because it's money laundering.
Right.
So that guy has the proofs to indict us, and they indict us for.
What were you officially indicted for? What were your charges?
I never knew.
Oh, no.
No. Look, I was charged for a conspiration.
Conspiracy.
Of importing drugs and laundering. But when I surrendered to Kaskerowski, he took me to a hotel 2 days, and he put all that let's not say lies. He had some how can I be diplomatic to say some.
Well, he puts his what he believes to be his evidence.
Yes,
in front.
Right. Get me, so
yeah.
Get this. This is the one. I'm going to tell you what I did. I did this, and then he comes talking about this guy Salcedo. It's because Salcedo. Okay, let's do something. Let's go to trial, and that's your witness. Put him down there. Because Salcedo was saying that he was inventing stuff, no? That one day he was in the forest walking, and he saw a guy, a hitman that we had, that my father had, burying something. I thought, that guy was helping this guy bury that guy. So put him there.
Yeah.
Put him in there is a witness against me. I'll destroy him. So I said, no, don't get upset. I said, okay, so this is what I did. This is what was my responsibility. And he believed me because I don't have nothing to hide. I surrender. And something that...
Yeah, but let's... Before we get to the surrender part, you were on the run for quite a while.
4 years, yeah.
When did that start?
July of 2002?
Mm-hmm. So what put you on the run?
What put me on the drone that I knew what they wanted, and nobody wants to be captured, right? If you know in advance that you're going to get hit, you're going to run like hell. So I have corrupt high officers in the secret police, the DAS.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy told me, I was in Cartagena doing something, a legal process that I had in Cartagena. And he called me and said, hey, they're going to Cali to capture you because they knew where my house was. So they went to Cali, they didn't find me, I was in Cartagena, and then I started running.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
How difficult was that? Were you married at the time?
Yeah, very difficult.
A child?
Yes, two kids. It was, for me, it was the...
Did you bring them with you?
No. I cannot change their lives.
Yeah.
So, you know, I ran by myself. I saw my kids and my wife every 6 or 8 months. But it was very difficult, you know, because it was something that I didn't know. And then what happened? I was very important for them, for my father and uncle. And then everything start like changing, because now I'm not important anymore, and it's true, because life continues, right? Everybody has life, and I'm there in hiding, and it was very complicated, because I was a guy who was able to do stuff, you know, to
you had power.
I have power. Now I have to depend on everybody, you know.
Now you're at the mercy of the folks that you used to have power over.
Yeah. So now I'm at the mercy of them, and I sent a message, 15 days to go, 15 days to come back. Everything was, you know, complicated. But in the end, I knew what's going to happen. They were not going to get indicted, too. So I said, I'm going to be able to avoid being captured, because I'm going to wait, because in my heart, I believe they were going to do something to help me, right?
When you say they, who's they?
My father and uncle.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But they were more interested in trying to stay in Colombia, because with all that corruption they had done for this politician, they believed they could, you know, skip away. But I waited patiently. Not because I wanted that to happen, you know, because I know it was going to happen. You know, it was clear for me. So in 2003, they got indicted. I got indicted in another conspiration. And so now... It was, you know, I was waiting what was going to happen. And they were still fighting to stay in Colombia. So it's crazy. So my uncle is, they sent my uncle in December in 2004 or something. And he sent a letter to me. Don't worry, son. I'm going to do something for you. Okay. Nothing happens. Then my father, 4 months later, he's brought here and... March of 2005, that same letter. Don't worry, son, I'm going to do something. So I waited 7 months. They're over here. So they believe that they were doing something, you know, pressuring the government. We're going to go to trial. They were doing this. Kaczorowski was an all around United States looking for witness. Mm-hmm. There were 40 witnesses against us. So... who will believe Gilberto Rodriguez and Miguel Rodriguez, the second more important cartel in history, didn't do what the government was saying?
Right.
Yeah. So it's crazy, no? Mine, no? So I waited. I waited patiently, and the answer never came. So I said, it's my turn to do something for my kids, and I made an arrangement with the government. I surrendered.
Yeah. Why?
Why? Because I had a kid that had 11 and had a kid that 8 years old, and I cannot continue, you know.
Did you think, though, that if you would have just surrendered 4 years earlier, you would have been done 4 years earlier?
I had never done a day. If you'd
surrendered?
If I surrendered and betrayed my uncle like he says, I hadn't done a day, because I knew what they wanted. They wanted me to rat on him, mm-hmm. and I was not going to do that. Right.
But you didn't get the same loyalty from them, though.
Yeah, but I did, but I can sleep like my wife says. You can sleep like a baby because you did the right thing.
How do you define the right thing? What was the right thing for you?
The right for me, what I'm convinced that the right thing is waiting for my father, because in the end, it was my father more important for me. Waiting, going to the tomb. Outside the tomb with my father, because I knew my father lost everything when he was sent over here, you know? All his
life. Tomb,
la tumba. We have a saying that I go to the cemetery with the guy, but I'm going to bury with him, right? I went to the cemetery with my dad, but I knew he lost it. And now it was my opportunity to save my family, my daughter, right, my wife, right. And me. That was the right thing to do. No, I didn't betray my father, because 6 months before that, this guy from New York was sending me messages. Hey, mm-hmm. surrender. You know, catch me if you can. Right? Because I knew what they wanted. They wanted my dad and my uncle, and I wasn't mm-hmm. going to give them to them. For me, for what I did, They were not brought here to the United States. You know, they were brought because that was their destiny, right? And somebody else made the indictments against them. I didn't do it.
So for those 4 years, where were you hiding out at?
I was, you know, I have an advantage. I don't look like a bandit. So I was running in a zone that's called Manizales. Mm-hmm. Manizales, where one of the brother of Escobar is born.
Yep.
In Manizales building in like on a mountain, it's very cold, but if you go down like an hour, you got a very pleasant weather.
So what kind of work did you do?
Nothing. I was, I you know, what was my front, that I was a lawyer in Bogota, and that I suffer from the gout, that I do. So in those places, there are those waters that are hot. How do you call it?
The hot springs.
Yeah, hot springs. So I was on vacation going to the hot springs. So I had a lady who went.
You were on vacation for 4 years?
For 4 years, running from one place to another.
Jeez.
Oh, man.
I mean, you know, it sounds exciting, but I can't imagine it would be.
So what was that 4 years like on the run the whole time? I mean, when did you ever get a good night's sleep?
Yeah, I took a pill to sleep. I didn't care. I have something that's crazy that I had a shirt, and a blue shirt, for if they catch me, I put it on so I can go good in the pitch.
Yeah, a nice dress shirt. Yeah, always want to look good.
It's all about the appearance. Yeah. That's funny.
And it was four crazy years that maybe I lost, and maybe my father gained. You know, being able to live in Colombia with his family, I gave that to my father.
But you're only talking to your kids every 6 to 8 months. How tough was that on you?
Very tough. Very tough because, you know, they didn't understand. But, you know, I know I have a good relation with my kids because I always tell them the truth. My wife was mad with me because before I surrender, I sit with my oldest at 11, the other one at 8. They don't understand what I'm talking. But I believe that. But they knew what's going on.
Right.
I say, hey, I did this. I did this. And I don't know why it came out of me. I'll come back in 5 years. And I came back in 5 years.
Well, let's talk about that then. So you were, what finally led you to say, I'm going to surrender? Was it just you were tired of being on the run?
The letter.
The letter? Let's talk about the letter.
Yeah, there was a letter that my wife received for an accident. And that letter, she never shared with me this information, but she went to me and said, because she was the one who always was trying to stop me. No, don't do it because you're going to regret it all your life. It's your dad, it's your uncle. And then that day she came, she said, I need to talk to you. So she sent me the information. And then I sent for her. And then she said, it's time. They're not thinking about you.
What did the letter say? I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say this is where the betrayal part comes in.
Right.
But I don't know because my uncle said I betrayed him, but I never sent a letter saying that I'm going to betray him. So in that letter, they said that they were going to, they don't tell me anything, that they were going to try to get 15 years because they had a good case and that. And so she never told me, frankly, what that letter says, you know. She and I always ask her, why did that letter say? And she said, I'm not going to tell you.
She's not going to tell you because you wouldn't like what was in there, right?
Maybe. And she didn't want, she always had very good relations with my father. My father loved her because she know the kind of woman that I have. And she doesn't want to be, she's a person that don't like conflict. So the only she said, it's time. Do your thing.
Well, it's time to do your thing. So the only way you end up doing the only way with all the charges you're facing you can do 5 years is if you cooperate.
Yeah, I help the government.
How?
Because when I surrender, I'm a lawyer. I know what I was doing and I knew what they needed on me. They needed me to accept the charges, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they need. The government needed that to finish up the Cali cartel. So I say, okay, I'll surrender, but I need my family to be taken out of the, and I have this letter. I have there. I have that letter because I'm waiting, because they say my uncle brought a book. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for that because I have my proof that I'm not a traitor. So in their agreement, they say, okay, I ask for all my family, 28 members that I love, taken out of the OFAC list, right?
Mm-hmm.
And OFAC. No persecuted against them anymore for the American government. And parole for my wife, my two kids, and another person that came with me that was a cousin of me.
You wanted them to bring them to the United States?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they know, we'll permit. No. You sign it. When you sign it, I surrender. So I have that document signed by the government. They gave me that, and then I decided to surrender, and then I surrendered.
Where?
In Panama, in 2006. They only can give me 10 years, in the agreement said. I only can get 10 years. That's something that they say we cannot guarantee. It's about the judge.
It's right? The judge, absolutely. You might reach a plea agreement, but the judge can always
So that was my agreement. And then when I surrendered and I'm here, here it becomes like a conflict with my uncle, because Kaczorowski didn't understand why they continue, you know, I'm here, why they continue to, you know, say they were going to go to a trial. Kaczorowski didn't want a trial.
And you keep mentioning that name. Tell everybody who that is.
Kaczorowski is the agent that was persecuting us for more than 15 years. He was the guy who built all the case against.
Which agency was he with?
He was, in those days, he was with Custom. Now it's ICE, right?
Right. Yeah.
So he was again.
That's the one we were talking about. I think we talked about before, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a very good investigator.
Yeah.
Nobody liked him, but he was a very good investigator.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you don't like him.
No, I like him. He helped me.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes your enemy can convert in a very good ally.
Yeah.
And he was a very good ally for me. He helped me a lot. He helped my family. So I'm grateful for that. He kept his word, and I kept my word. What I promised, it, I give. And what he promised, he gave it to me. So I don't have nothing to say about it. Nobody, a lot of DA agents doesn't like him.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, you know, it's not a popularity contest sometimes. So you struck that deal. How did the judge come down on
it? Okay, so I have three advantages. First, I surrender. That's important. Second, I made this arrangement. And third, this guy, I'm in prison, and that guy comes looking for me. Hey, I need you to help me in something. What can I help you with? I need you to talk to your family. I need you to... I promise you...
When he says your family, your immediate family or your
We're talking about my cousins, my brothers, and everything. I need you to talk to them because I'm willing to ask them to offer them a deal. And say, okay, what is the deal? Tell them to come forward. Help me convince these two guys to accept this agreement. And I will take you out of the list of the offer list. I will never persecute him again because he had two or three people more to bring to pressure the old man. And I told him, no, you don't need to bring anybody. You got me. So, you know, if I declare myself guilty, everything go to hell. So he said, okay, talk to your family. So I sent my lawyer to Colombia to talk to my family. And my uncle was saying, hey, watch out, he's going to betray you. Okay. But that relation with my cousin, Humberto, he believed in what I was saying. Because he knew he was going to be indicted and bring him in.
Right.
So I sent my lawyer, and they accepted to come here by a parole, three or four of my family members, and sit down with the authorities, and they made the deal. So that was something very important, but we talked. They talk about $2 billion.
$2.1 billion.
Yeah, the government seized, and who helped the government? Me, right? So that was something that the judge very taken in consideration. And so I had three aces: surrender,
cooperation,
and this deal. So the guy, the government wanted 8 years, the prosecutors, and the judge said, no, this guy, I'm going to give this guy 6 months, and I don't give him less. Because another guy from the Cali cartel, I gave 52 months. So I'm going to give him 16 months.
60 months, 5 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So right. It was a miracle again.
Where did you do your time at?
I did 3 years and a half in South Carolina in Edgefield. There's a prison there. And the other year and something, I did it in Miami in the building.
Why did they transfer you?
Why did they transfer me?
Yeah, from South Carolina to Miami.
No.
Is that the way around?
The way around. I did first in the hall. I did some time in the building in downtown Miami.
Yep. Yeah.
And then I did the rest of the time in South Carolina.
Okay. All right.
You know, when you're not cooperating, you go to prison. If you cooperate, you stay in downtown.
Yeah.
You know it that way.
Some people are smart enough to figure it out and some aren't.
Yeah, that's smart.
All right.
Yeah.
So you did your 5 years. What did you do when you got out?
Was, you know, it was very complicated. I have to go to the bathroom again. Sorry.
Sure.
No, we can take this out.
It's okay. Well, now that we're all back from our bathroom breaks, which is what happens to men over 50 and 60. So.
It's an old man thing.
No, but we were finishing up, and actually the part of the conversation we were having offline here, I want to kind of bring online, but you did your 5 years, but you were on the run for 4 years. You were in prison for 5 years. How did you... Tell me about the way your wife reacted to this while you were on the run. I mean, at some point... It's kind of like between the 4 years and the 5 years. Does she lose faith in you?
Yeah, I believe it was a moment because, you know, this guy hired a lawyer. My father and uncle hired a guy, a lawyer from New York called Sapp, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy comes with this theory. Esta teoría, I don't know. Theory? This belief.
This theory?
This theory that I should be on a run for 20 years. And then I come back and I can make a better deal. So this guy is telling me.
He thought you should be on the run for 20 years?
Yeah, so he, you know, my wife is looking for hope. And this guy comes with that theory. So, it was like a year before I surrender, I feel lonely by myself because even my wife, you know, that was behind me for so long time, she, you know, like, I felt like she, I don't know how to express that. Like, she was lost in hope, right?
Yeah, she was losing hope.
Yeah. Because this guy said, this guy's going to be in 20 years on the run. What am I going to do?
So during those 4 years, did you ever see your family?
Yeah, I saw them every 6 months.
Oh, I didn't know if you meant you just had contact.
No, I saw them because I arranged how to see them every 6 months because I could not change what my kids and my wife did, you know, because they had to go to school.
Right. You didn't want to disrupt their routines.
It was my problem, and I have to, you know, face it. So, and that day, a year before I surrender, you know, it was a very hard moment for my relationship with my wife because, you know, I feel that day I felt so lonely. I only had, you know, me. But it was an illusion because even my wife, always my wife was behind me, but it was
How
very
are you
hard.
Supporting your family? I mean, the cartels pretty much.
I had
much
a lot of money.
What's that?
I had a lot of money.
Right.
Because I told you I had my office of lawyers. I'm making huge amounts of money.
And your office is still going at this time?
No, it's closed, but I already had some money, you know. In the business, not the legal business, the corporations that I had was giving me a lot of money.
Okay.
So money was not a problem for them, right? The problem is that you cannot hear me. It's all me. When somebody comes and say to you, hey, this guy has to run 20 years, and then we'll see what I can do.
That's not even realistic.
Dude, come on.
So I talked to the guy. You're telling me that I have to run?
So you could run 20 years to get the same 5 years you got after 4 years. Yeah.
Crazy. That's, yeah. That, this, it was my uncle sending the guy to give me that. I'm a lawyer. I know what I'm talking about. What was I facing and what was my ace? Mm-hmm. I knew what was my ace.
Yeah.
I knew what was they wanted for me.
Jeez.
So you turn yourself in. You go through everything. You do the plea agreement. What kind of cooperation did you have to give to the government?
That what I told you. I surrender and I set my charges and convince my family to give up the business and all the properties that we had. That was my grand corporation that people believe that I betrayed somebody. What I tell you?
Did you ever testify against anybody?
Nobody, never.
Okay.
I never go to a trial against nobody because I got 5 years. So why should I go and risk my family in Colombia for 5 years? I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it.
How did you, once you took that deal and you knew now you've got 5 years now, how was your relationship with your kids at this point?
No, but better because they are seeing me every
Saturday at 8 o'clock in the morning.
No, not at 8 o'clock, but they can go and see me.
Whether they're drunk or not, right?
Yeah. They can see me. I can call them.
Yeah.
You know, so I have a better relationship with that, and I have a wonderful woman that always made me important in my house.
Well, God bless your wife because she stuck behind you for 4 years on the run. 5 years in prison, right?
Yeah, I have to have something good, right?
We would think say so. That.
It must be the sex.
I think so.
Yeah.
So you're out now, free man. And this one point we made today at the conference is that, you know, like you said earlier, you abided by our justice system, you did your time, you've paid your debt to society, and now you're a free man. And I mentioned to you earlier today, I'm surprised that you were allowed to stay in the United States, but was that part of your plea agreement?
Yeah, but it almost changed because a guy from DA hated me. He was an important guy in Colombia when they were trying to get me, mm-hmm. because there was two agents from DAA and 11 police guys from the police was trying to get me. And that guy, and I don't know who he is, he got, you know, a very important
position
in South America.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy, I don't know, he hated me. I don't know what his name, I don't care. And he started to, you know, say I'm a very dangerous man. They shouldn't let me here. And so I was going to be released the 27th of May. Oh no, 26th of May. They did something and they didn't. I didn't let me out, and they sent me to a immigration jail.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, you know, a very discussion in the government. They wanted to throw me out. And you know who saved me?
Who's that?
One of the prosecutors. Because that guy was a rookie in those days.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know who he is, but when Obama went to power, he was the number three in the justice system.
In the Justice Department.
And so the guy, they went, Kaczorowski went to the guy and said, hey, this is happening with William. And the guy called him. You let him go. He kept his word, and I'm going to keep mine. So he permitted me to come out, and then they sent me to, I go to talk to a guy in ICE, and that guy speaks, he said, I'm going to give you an opportunity. You're gonna have 6 months to prove that you can stay in this country. And they gave me 6 months on parole. And well, I have 14 years here, so I've been a good boy.
What's your citizenship status?
I got a deferred action letter every year. And every day they change it. I'm waiting for something that I don't know if it's going to come. Ex-visa.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm waiting.
And your family's under the same...
No. My family, unfortunately, my wife decided to do an asylum. And she lost it, but we went to trial, and she beat the she won the
hearing,
the trial.
Yeah.
So the wife and daughters are okay.
The wife and daughters are Americans already, the three of them.
All right. So now, so it's interesting. So I asked you this in the green room, but we'll talk about it on here. Why did you agree to come to the Southern California Gang Conference? Because you said something funny. Normally, you're not used to seeing 900 cops in front of you. You're used to seeing all the cops behind you chasing you. So why did you decide to come here and talk?
Because it was a challenge. I believe if I can do good and talk to those people and they saw that I'm talking about the heart, I can go anywhere with this story, right? If I can do this there, I can do anywhere and tell this story. And I want to share with kids. That's my main goal. Be able to be in front of kids and tell them this story. You know, the way it is. Because I believe that's a great opportunity for kids to change the way they think. Because kids are very easy to be, you know, target for this organized criminal organization. And I know what's going on. So I know how can I talk to them, you know.
Let me ask you, let's kind of close this out now because we've been going at this for a while now.
Yeah.
And it's been good stuff. Let's assume that the United States government said, we want to put you, the man who wrote the book, William Rodriguez Abadia, in charge of drug policy for the United States. We want you to help us redefine the war on drugs. What would you do? What would you do different than what we're doing today? Because we've got the cartels in Mexico who are extremely violent, right? We still got drug trafficking going on out of Colombia. What would you do to... It's a fiction to think you're going to get rid of it. You're not going to get rid of it. But how do you get it down to such a point to where it's not making the impact on society like it is now with the violence, the deaths? We've got fentanyl now, 100,000 people a year dying. What would you do different knowing what you know?
I believe that what I study and I prepare myself, I believe we need to do three things. First, repression has to continue for organizations like us, the cartels, because you know you cannot, you know, let them, you know, do whatever they want. It's important, but it's not the only policy that you have to, you know, enforce, because if we talk about the 1970, Nixon decided to go to war against drugs, right? And we're in 2023. And if we go and look at the reports of the National Unit, La ONU, the Union. How you say La ONU?
The Uniform Crime Report?
No. The ONU. The ONU is the United Nations.
Oh, yeah.
United Nations every year has to make a report, right?
Right.
I read the one in 2019. And it says that production and consume is grown. So is repression done the job? No, right? In part, yes, in part, no. So we need, for me, three things. Repression. I don't believe too much in legalization of the drugs because if you see marijuana cases, now everybody can get marijuana. If I have a headache, you can take marijuana. So I don't believe in that. I believe marijuana is, legalization is for making a better product and controlling prices. And in Portugal, in 2001, a guy decided to treat patients the way they are, you know, drug addicts the way they are, victims. So that guy, if you're not in a conspiration and you're not a...
You're not in a conspiracy.
You're in a... So if you have doses minimum, they treat you like a patient. And he did this and... In 10 years, consume has dropped 50%. That's something that I'm bending. You can see it. I think in one state here, they're doing it. Maryland or something like that, they're doing the same thing. So for me, we need these three. repression because repression is one. Legalization is another one to control what I'm telling you, the product. And the other one is this, because in this country, 500,000 person are going in jail for dosage minimum. So that's crazy.
Yeah.
So you have to treat those guys, they are sick people, and you have to give them the treatment they needed. So maybe that way we can do something, because I know I was in the system, and a lot of this stuff is for money, because prisons are making a lot of money in this country. So we have to look in another way to see if really we can, you know, stop this. I see it that way. Maybe I'm wrong, you know, but what I'm somebody who lived this life, somebody who knew this life, somebody who has prepared myself to try to say a different message out there.
This has been something very different for us, right?
Yeah. George Young was interesting because of his involvement, you know, with Pablo. He knew what was going on. He was at a hotel one night when they threw a guy off the balcony.
Yeah, and he was kind of like a folk legend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, because of the movie Blow with Johnny right. Depp and all that, but
they glamorized it in a sense.
To you know, the one thing we said here at the conference today is, you know, this was probably a once in a lifetime for a lot of those police officers today. There was 900 cops there. The fact that they got to hear somebody who was at your level and one of the largest cocaine production and distribution groups in the entire world. And the organizers, when we took the break, even, you know, we went back in the green room there for a few minutes. They even came up and they said, you two have everybody's attention out there. Nobody's getting up and leaving. And when we came back out, they were all there waiting on us.
I was watching from the back, too. I mean, you could tell when people get bored, they vote with their feet. Yeah. They get up and they go, right? So your message resonated. Now, I will tell you, it doesn't mean that people... Some of those folks in there aren't giving you a free pass. They're not saying, oh, everything's okay now. But what they're respecting is the fact that you showed up here, you told your story, you took accountability for what you did. But the other thing, too, is they're here to learn. If you don't learn from the people doing this stuff, how can you be effective, you know, at investigating it and stopping it? So the fact that you come out here, you've done a big service to the communities out here so that these folks get a better understanding of what's the mindset, how do you think, how can we do a better job of investigating and stopping? And sometimes it's not about kicking in the door and throwing people in handcuffs. Sometimes it's really about it got to the point where it's kind of like, turn yourself in. Let's figure out a way through this and get you what you need, get us what we need, and bring this to an end. Because the thing is, too, is to stop the violence, right?
That's one of the most important focus, violence, you know, because that's not the option. And unfortunately, this criminal organization, even if you don't want, sooner or later, you're going to find violence. You know, because that's the nature of the territory.
Yeah. So, I mean, we just want to say thank you, William. Thank you for taking the time today to come to the conference, and thank you for taking the time this evening to give our listeners insight into, I mean, a life that most people will never experience. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm not so bad as they say.
Well, you
did your time.
You did your time. Man. Hey, let's talk about that. But let's end with this. So, folks, we'll put the link on this on our webpage. Obviously, it'll be on our book list, Son of the Cali Cartel. The narcos who wiped out Pablo Escobar and the Medellin Cartel, William Rodriguez Abadia. Did I say the right? Abadia?
Yeah.
Abadia.
Abadia.
Okay.
We'll work with him.
Yeah, we'll work with you. All right. So, hey, look, thank you for doing this. It's been a long day. I mean, you spoke, and we're here. We've been here for going on 2.5 hours, man. This is good stuff. Yeehaw. All right. What we're going to bring this to a close. Don't go anywhere, everybody else. Stay tuned for the debrief. I tell you, again, we give him credit. Of course, I helped him out a little bit. I shared a bottle of wine with him.
I'm so glad I don't drink, because who knows what you'd do if I did.
Well, you did have a Guinness, remember? You had a Guinness.
I did. Again, thank you, Perry.
Thank you, Perry, man, the man that took care of us. But you know what was interesting is, you know, he's trying to make a go of it. He's speaking out. He's getting involved in some stuff. And I think legitimately in his heart, he wants to do like Mundo. You know, they do want to look at the kids, prevent the kids from getting into this because they got kids, right? But but it is definitely a difference from the privileged lifestyle he grew up in and the money he had and the places he could go and the things he could do. And you know where he is now. He doesn't have an entourage. He doesn't have bodyguards. He doesn't have all this stuff. He is a, if you saw him hanging out in an airport, speaking of hanging out in airports, we both had stories about that. We didn't tell you about, we'll get into that later. Yeah. But yeah, he's, it's just him now. It's no longer, the people look at TV and they go, oh, it'd be great to do this. Yeah. Let's think about that. You're almost killed. Two of your bodyguards are killed. You're on the run for 4 years. Even Pablo, remember at the end, you weren't there. We understand that. That was Narcos. But even at the end, what was Pablo? Shirt, jeans, you know, with one guy, one Sicario left. That was it.
Absolutely. So this is, you know, you've heard us say it before. We're true believers in the rule of law here in the United States. According to our system, William Rodriguez surrendered. He was convicted. He did his time. He's off probation now. And he is a resident of the United States. So as much as you may condemn him for what he did in the past, he did pay his debt to society according to our rules here in the United States. So it's one reason we did bring him on the show here. We hope you got an insight into the Cali cartel. I don't think you got the 100% insight that we'd have loved for you to have. But I mean, but again, you got to
name the last time you were interviewing a suspect and they gave you up everything, 100% of everything.
The only time that ever happens, and then you still can't talk about murders. The only time that ever happens is if you're sitting with somebody who's cooperating and their attorney's sitting right next to them and they've signed a proffer that says, everything I'm getting ready to tell you, you cannot use against me.
But absent that proffer, if you're like in a case and you're talking to somebody, say, I swear that's all. And you go, really?
And let me tell you, every time they blink, there's a lie coming out, okay? That's how many lies come out.
I was dealing with one guy. I said, first of all, we went from I didn't do it, I don't know about it, and 25 burglaries later, it's kind of like, is there anything else? If there is, he goes, I just can't remember. That's okay. 25 or 30, you're still going to prison. So we want to talk. So the other thing, too, is make sure, and Merce holding up the book, he read it. And actually, I will tell you, too, I was impressed. You annotated the hell out of that thing. It's called Son of the Cali Cartel, The Narcos Who Wiped Out Pablo Escobar and the Medellin Cartel by William Rodriguez Abadia. Mm-hmm. And it actually it's kind of funny because Murphy puts along the top of the book, I say not funny, because the truth untold by Netflix, quite frankly, he didn't like the way he was portrayed in Netflix. Well, as we told him, I got news for you. JP didn't like the way he was portrayed. Connie definitely didn't like the way she was portrayed, as we found out in our patreon.com/gameofcrimes shameless plug there when we talked about reviewed the Narcometer season 2. So, you know, that's the thing. It's fiction. You know, he did not like it. Now he wants to sue Murph. I think he's got zero chance of winning anything right against Netflix.
Think about it. It's Netflix. Yeah, how many lawyers do they have on their regular payroll that can drag this out and bankrupt you? I mean, that's basically what it boils down to. So,
it's called lawfare.
Yeah, I mean, he has to do what he thinks is right. We're not saying good or bad either way.
He can have at it. So basically it starts, and you read the book. I mean, just, I would encourage you to read the book, get inside the mind. Just remember it's written from a certain point of view, but we do want to be just, we do want to thank him. He was gracious enough to spend a lot of his time. He actually came back the next day too, Murph, signed books, you know, was there for some other stuff. So we appreciate it. And look, he's a guy that if you did not know anything about him and you just met him out in public, you go, seems like a decent guy. Not very big, what, 5'6", maybe 5'7". Mm-hmm. Not a big guy. Doesn't look threatening at all. He was actually a nice guy. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Don't forget where he came from.
Yeah. And he didn't, but everybody's got a point of view. But hey, hopefully you guys enjoyed this. So let us know what you think about it. Head on over to Patreon. Head on over to Patreon. I've been doing too many commercials. Head on over to Apple and Spotify. Yes, Apple and Spotify. Hit those 5 stars. Let us know what you think of it. It really helps. But then head on over to Game of Crimes.
podcast.com. We've got the link to the book, not only on our site, but to the Amazon site. So check that out. Follow us on social media at Game of Crimes on Twitter, Game of Crimes Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. And also do go to patreon.com/gamecrimes. One thing we forgot to mention in the first part, make sure you go to Game of Crimes fans, our mafia queen who rules with a velvet glove, Sandy Salvato. Get in on the hilarity that ensues behind the scenes. We post a lot of good stuff. You and I are getting tagged regularly in posts, and in fact, a couple of them. Like, is this what you do, firearms training and DEA, Murph? You know?
Maybe. I'm going to have to catch up on my responses here.
Yeah. So we do too. We've both been traveling. We'll tell you that story from hell in the next episode. But hey, but yeah, seriously, guys, patreon.com/gameofcrimes. We've got a lot of good stuff. Game of Crimes fans. Just search for that on Facebook, answer a couple questions, get in the ballpark. You'll be admitted to the inner sanctum where hilarity and jocularity ensues. So that's two different words, hilarity and jocularity.
Jocko, is that like Jocko Willink? No.
No, and it's not a athletic supporter either.
Like we're not saying that about you, Jocko, because I don't want that man showing up.
I don't want that. He's a big dude, man. No, don't crush me like Arnold would. So anyway, hey guys, but we appreciate it. We really appreciate you guys, and give us the feedback what you think about the episode. And thank you guys once again for playing the biggest, baddest, most dangerous game of all. As you found out, dangerous, yep. The Game of Crimes.